Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good Friday morning. Welcome into Grant and Danny on a Football Friday, presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. No Danny today. He was here yesterday gutting through what he thought was some type of a cold. We now know it was strep throat. So that's fun. At least we don't work in a tiny little studio where the entire day we're within 3 feet of one another. At least Dar wasn't busy like with the haircutting and the shaving of Chris Russell yesterday, passing mics back and forth between Danny, myself, he, the whole crew. So who knows how Monday's going to sound or what things are going to look like. But we do wish the best for Danny's speedy strep throat recovery. I'm with you for the next 4 hours, and then Chad Dukes versus the world. Got a lot planned. Going to be a good show. Excited about it. Les Carpenter of the Washington Post previews Redskins-Eagles at 11:30. Ross Tucker, our radio.com sports NFL insider, joins us at 1. And when we talk to Ross Tucker with a look at Week 15 around the NFL, I want to talk Lamar Jackson with him. What an unbelievable story Jackson has become. A Ross, by the way, will be brought to you by the new gas-powered Sprinter from Mercedes-Benz Vans. Who watched Thursday Night Football last night? How amazing is this Ravens offense right now? I covered the 2012 Redskins when they were doing what Baltimore is now before it was cool. The Ravens have taken that and they have perfected it. In fact, that same year in 2012, the San Francisco 49ers, in an offense coordinated by Greg Roman, in the second half of the season started doing some of these same things conceptually with Colin Kaepernick. Roman, their OC then, I used to say, should have sent Kyle Shanahan and Mike Shanahan and Matt LaFleur and Sean McVay and some of that Redskins staff bottles of champagne, because he was just ripping things from what the Redskins were doing with Griffin. The 49ers were a better team with a better defense, so while Washington soon fizzled out, started the postseason, the 49ers went on a run all the way to the Super Bowl. And you may remember Colin Kaepernick had an epic and memorable game where he literally, figuratively ran all over the Green Bay Packers. Now you fast forward 7 years, and Roman's back in the lab cooking up these formations, this 50-series read option where Jackson is running all over the place. And he has a better version of Griffin from 12 and Kaepernick from 12 in Lamar Jackson, who's having an unprecedentedly brilliant season. There is no defending this offense right now. I'd say pick your poison, but there's no choice to make. The Ravens do what they want. They show up. They score as many points as they want to until they call off the dogs and they put in Griffin. And then they go back to work a couple of days later getting ready for the next team. That's where we're at. Start of the year, I was immensely skeptical, both of Jackson as a passer and of the idea of this offense working again, this many years later in the league. I've not only bought in, I'm now rooting for its success because it is both fun and unique. It is different. It is historical. I don't really get people that are watching this and wanting it to fail. Can't relate to that. Don't we want excitement? Don't we want a guy that, by all accounts, seems like a mensch of a human being thriving? And don't we want something that's a little bit different than what we've seen for years and years and years? This is fun. And the word I would use for the Ravens offense, I think the perfect word is just efficient. Everything comes easily. Last night, Lamar Jackson put on an absolute show.
Second down and 20 now. The pass to the end zone. Caught for the touchdown. Baltimore, Seth Roberts.
Five touchdown passes in a game in which he rushed for 86 yards for Lamar Jackson. You realize the Ravens scored a touchdown on their first three drives of the game for the fourth time this season. Think about that. Remember, the Redskins went almost a month without scoring a touchdown. Four times this year, in over a quarter of their games to this point, Baltimore has scored in each of its three drives and gone up 21 to whatever their opponents had at that point, playing from out in front. Prior to last night, they were tied with the 99 Rams. That's the greatest show on turf. The 2014 Packers, that was Aaron Rodgers on his way to an MVP award. And the 2018 Chiefs, last year's Kansas City group with Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes throwing for 50 touchdowns. Some of the great offenses we've ever seen in this sport. Those were the teams prior to last night that had done what Baltimore had done three times. The Ravens are the first team to score touchdowns in drives one, two, and three of a game four times. Jackson breaks Mike Vick's record for rushing among quarterbacks. Everybody knows now he's the number one all-time leading rusher in a season for QBs. I think that was talked about a few times last night. 1,100 rushing yards for him this year. But he also has 10, 20-yard rushes. He's explosive. He makes big plays. He and Vick are the only two guys to ever do that. We've just never seen a season like this. Give him the MVP award. Thanks for trying, Pat Mahomes, to defend your title. Thanks for showing up, Russell Wilson, and making a college effort. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, maybe next year. Lamar Jackson is the most valuable player. 33 touchdowns, 6 picks, a 112 rating. And as I said, your boy was wrong. I just didn't think the offense would go this deep into the season without being solved, and it has. And I think the reason for that is that Jackson is a little bit better than the guys that have come before him at doing this. The thing I was wrong about with Jackson was his efficiency as a passer. Now, I still have skepticism. While I root for more of these games from Baltimore and good things for Lamar Jackson, where I'm still concerned about their chances is I just don't know that they win the Super Bowl this way. I hope they do because it will change how I and a lot of people view winning and how you can and can't win in the NFL. But they are what I call front runners. They play from in front, and they're able to use the threat of running beautifully. They're throwing touchdowns to wide open receivers. There is a difference between being an efficient passing team and being a team that throws the ball well. You know, being a team that can throw the ball. They're not the latter, in my opinion. Jackson threw five touchdowns last night. So everyone goes, oh my gosh, what a quarterback, what a passer. Well, he threw five touchdown passes on a night where he completed seven more passes than that or something. He's had a lot of four touchdown games with 13 completions, basically. And my point is, we have seen this before with guys who fizzled out. Now, I don't think this time Jackson will. I don't think this time this offense just gets solved like some Rubik's Cube. My skepticism is not about Jackson the player or even Baltimore's offense. It is about whether or not they can win the Super Bowl by going on a playoff murderer's row where you got to win, even though they'll get a bye and they'll play at home. Three games against elite teams where you don't fall behind and have to throw it a bunch. Because that's the whole key here. Can they throw when they have to? Can they throw when a team knows they're going to? Most teams are going to struggle to come back from down a couple of touchdowns. That goes without saying. But teams can Baltimore. I just don't know. I know what their offense looks like when they score touchdowns on their first three drives 30% of the time. And the other team is now chasing them, and they get to fake hand to Mark Ingram, or they get to run some option out to the right or the left. I know how that goes. What I don't know is when you're down, and I know Lamar Jackson's got to just drop back in the pocket and make throws. He's on pace for about 3,000, 3,200 passing yards this year. Are they able to win that way? That's the last element of my skepticism that they can remove, I suppose. But they've converted me otherwise to this point. Here's the trick is that no one's been able to put them in that spot. You know, a bunch of people who have watched the 12 Redskins or the 49ers or Cam Newton's Panthers kind of run into walls eventually, they can sit here and we can kind of go, I'm just not sure eventually you're going to have to throw the ball from the pocket a whole bunch. Which he does really well. Nobody's saying he doesn't. but with the element of the misdirection, with the element of biting on run fakes. What about when I don't have to worry about that anymore because it's 20-7, you're down in the third quarter? That's the problem they ran into against the Chargers in the playoffs last year. But what if they never have to deal with that? This is the equivalent of people who say that the UFC fighter who's undefeated eventually is going to lose because if you get him to the ground, you can beat him. He's got to stand up and throw fists, but when you get him to the ground, it's over. Nobody's gotten this guy to the ground. Maybe the better comp is, you know, an NBA team that lives and dies getting up and down the floor. They run. Everything's a track meet. When a team plays a half-court game against them, when they lure them into that old-school San Antonio Spurs way where you got to do things in the half court, they're going to be screwed. Well, what if you never get them in the half court? What if they're so good at what they do that you have to play their game? That's been the 2019 Ravens. That is the brilliance of this team. They're the best version of this that I've ever seen. It is awesome to watch. I'm curious, first, if they're converting you, if you weren't a believer at the beginning of the year, and maybe you were if you were watching the game last night. I mean, Lamar Mania has taken over. He is going to win the MVP award. How much fun you're having to watch this team. But also, do you buy them as a team that'll win or could win the Super Bowl? 800-636-1067. Should they be considered the favorites for the Super Bowl, as unique as what they do is? 800-636-1067. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Back was ever lived. He's having an immensely effective and super efficient season as a passer. But he's one of, right now, the most popular players among his peers that we've ever seen. In terms of, normally the great players are a little bit polarizing. Whether it's Brady or it's Rodgers or somebody else. Good luck finding an NFL player that doesn't love what Lamar Jackson's doing. Did anybody see the video last night after the game? So I think it was Robbie Anderson, the receiver for the Jets, comes over and does the move that every player is doing now. And I think it's tired, but I'm an old man and I'm a boomer or whatever. I don't know. But players get each other's autographs and they say, hey, give me the jersey off your back. Sign it to me. I'll give you my jersey and we'll collect them. I thought it was kind of cool at first. Used to annoy me initially as a fan because my team just lost. I'm watching. The Redskins are playing a game they have to have in December to make the playoffs. They lose the game. I'm on the verge of tears, but everything's okay because my outside linebacker's smiling and posing for photos and exchanging jerseys with his buddy on the other team. Never really felt right, but as I've gotten older and I've realized this is a business and these players don't live and die with these results and they're just out there trying to make some cash and support their families, I don't take it personally anymore. I think some fans probably still do, but it's just tired because everyone does it. But it's one of those things where this game respects game. Like, I'm going to get a picture with this guy and get his jersey and put it on my wall because he's my favorite quarterback. So Anderson does that, and this happens after every game now. But what's amazing with Lamar Jackson is, this is not a bit, he's actually now bringing out extra jerseys after the game because he's getting so many requests from other guys. So there's a video last night where one of the Ravens staffers essentially hands him like two or three other jerseys. And so he gives Anderson his personalized jersey sign. And the Jets, who continued after the game to look like high schoolers asking for autographs of Lamar Jackson, which was fitting because they spent the entire 60 minutes looking like a high school outfit trying to defend and stop him, are in line basically. It's like a Lamar Jackson receiving line, where he's just taking these jerseys and signing them for different players on the Jets. I thought it was great because you see a bunch of times now where, like Dwayne Haskins as an example, went up to Aaron Rodgers after the Redskins-Packers game this past weekend where he was gutting through a foot injury and showed great courageousness. And he asked Aaron Rodgers after a conversation where they talked for his jersey, and Rodgers said, oh, I already promised it to someone. I'm sorry. Next time. Well, maybe Rodgers has to do the Lamar Jackson move where he just has three or four extra jerseys. And this is some, like, Macy's layaway aisle or something where you just go pick up your collection of jerseys and you start passing them out. Players love Lamar Jackson. Look at his teammates, man. Ingram, the receivers, Hollywood Brown, that talk about him. There was a player in the locker room last night who was basically on the verge of tears talking about what Jackson went through just to become a quarterback and some of the things that were said about him. I don't remember a guy more universally beloved in his locker room. And we'll see how this story ends this year in the playoffs and a couple of years from now. Takes a couple of losses to, you know, God forbid an injury. Or everything could change fast. But right now, this is a meteoric rise, the pace of which we really have not seen for anybody. He surpassed what was going on with Griffin. It's crazy. In the last calendar year, how fast and how high his star has risen. Daryl is in Woodbridge, wants to talk Lamar on Grant and Danny. What's up, dude? How are you?
Man, I'm great, man. You know what's crazy is I'm happy that you finally came around. Like, people try to make it so difficult. Football is a simple sport. If you get the ball in the best athlete's hands, chances are you're gonna make plays and you're gonna continuously make plays. When the best athlete is your quarterback, it's simple to get the ball to him because he touches it every play. Like, you can watch football from any level. It's not that much different. And if you watch Little League, you can always see the player who stands out that's like, oh, yeah, he's going to be a big-time player. It's no different than the NFL. He's the best athlete on the field, and you're constantly getting him the ball. He's bound to be good.
Yeah, I think a lot of that's true. I mean, the concerns I think that I have and others have are, first and foremost, the health of the quarterback when he runs around as much as Jackson. That'll never leave me, by the way. If you were to tell me right now he's going to get hurt in his next game, well, that would be a sports tragedy for the Ravens and for him and for the league, who really needs this guy, I think, at this point. He's become that good and that much of a story. I wouldn't be surprised. He's been great this year at avoiding the types of hits that could hurt him, by and large. He's more Russell Wilson than he is Robert Griffin. You saw, by the way, Griffin got into the game, and the first run he had, he got planted on the sideline and took a bigger shot than Jackson's taken. Probably all but three or four times this year. Now, some guys are able to avoid those hits. Last year, Jackson didn't, for the record. He left multiple games with injuries and in the concussion protocol a couple times. But he's learned to do that. So he's evolved, and that's an area where, you know, I'm more on board with him. The other thing other than the injuries, and I mentioned it in the opening monologue, if you will, is still the cynicism on the playing from behind, the knowing you're throwing it. Great quarterbacks beat you on obvious passing downs. That's the money down. That's where you get paid a lot of money as a passer. I am programmed and wired. My way of coming up in football, the way that I've always viewed the game is making throws from the pocket. So like a lot of other people, I'm trying to re-evaluate at all times with Lamar Jackson what it could look like in this very college-oriented different way of doing things. I got a crash course in this in 2012, but remember, I saw this explode too. I saw this work out as a disaster, not as a success story. So I'm trying to overcome that as I watch Lamar Jackson. I'm coming into this with some bias negatively against what Greg Roman's doing. But as you get more information, you add it to the file, and that's what I'm trying to do here. I worry that they will have a hard time winning if they're not playing from in front. They may not have to worry about it. They're that good. We'll see. It's going to be a blast to watch them in the playoffs. And we'll talk more about Lamar Jackson a little bit later on today on Grant and Danny. No Danny who's got strep throat. 106.7 The Fan. Next, Anthony Rendon's out. He's an Angel. I'm sorry. I know that it's going to be tough to say goodbye. But it is time to start thinking about life after Rendon at third base. Here's my question for Nats fans. I've got a little list of items that I'm considering as possibilities at third base. How do you want to solve that position now? With Rendon out, how do you want to mask that deficiency and replace him? Grant and Danny on the Fan. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on a Football Friday presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet. For real sports fans, if you missed our discussion on another amazing Lamar Jackson performance, you can always podcast the show or just rewind with the 24-hour radio.com rewind function. Download the app, select our station, and go back in time. Anthony Rendon agreed this week to a 7-year contract with the Angels, $245 million. I got to tell you, I was working on a story last night for The Athletic. And in doing so, I went back through memory lane. And it's funny because as a fan after a championship, when a guy means as much to an organization as Rendon did with the Nationals, It's just so different saying goodbye. And I'm not going to make this a Rendon versus Harper thing, but I've realized this with the Capitals as well. Devontae Smith-Pelly, you know, back of the roster types who were significant, like Alex Chason, who had big goals and big moments. It's just odd how much of an emotional attachment you have to players that provided for you some of the greatest sports joy of your life. But in going back through all of Rendon's greatest hits and greatest moments, I was reminded he almost never was a Washington National. Remember, the Atlanta Braves, of all teams, drafted him in 2008 out of Lamar High School in Houston, Texas. And he told the Braves at that time, I want $750,000 or I'm not signing with you. I'll go play baseball at Rice and go to college. They got close to but never met that demand. And so he went to Rice. Sounds familiar, right? And that was 2008. He goes on to be the Dick Howser Award winner as the best college baseball player in the country just 2 years later as a sophomore in 2010. The Nationals would pick sixth the following year. They had no business getting Anthony Rendon. The only reason they did is because Rendon broke his left ankle running the bases for Team USA when he was the best player in the country and the likely future number one overall pick. So he breaks his ankle. He ends up having some different issues, shoulder and arm and otherwise, that year leading up to the draft. And you know, a couple of teams just viewed him as either too injury-prone or injury-riddled that they weren't going to take him. So the Pirates at number one passed on him for some guy named Garrett Cole out of UCLA. How'd that work out? And then there are a couple of teams that made picks that completely flopped. You know, a local kid who I was happy to see get to the big leagues this year who went through the ringer with injuries, Danny Holson out of Virginia. Went number two to the Mariners, where everybody thought Rendon was going to go. A lefty from Charlottesville, who's Danny actually coached as a youth here in the D.C. area, believe it or not. But it wasn't until pick six that Rendon came off the board to the Nationals. Five picks after they thought he was going to be taken, he fell into their lap. And as people with the organization have told me, it was the easiest pick they've ever made. And it was the third straight year after Strasburg in 09 and Harper in 10 that they got arguably the best player in the draft class with Rendon in 2011 at number six. But it almost never even happened. Then he flew through the minor leagues, three games at AAA, I think like 17 games or something at AA. He had 60-some games in the minors and about 300 at-bats before he was in the big leagues making his debut with the Nationals. And in his second game, shocker, Tony Two Bags doubles for his first hit, scored Ian Desmond. Wasn't but a couple weeks later after being called back up that he had his first home run in a 6-6 game against the Indians to win a game in the ninth inning, 7-6. Started to show that clutch gene that would prove itself time and time again last October. And you go through the three-homer, 10-RBI game against the Mets a couple of summers ago at Nats Park when the Nats scored 23 runs, or obviously just the legendary postseason, the home run against Clayton Kershaw in the division series back-to-back with Juan Soto to tie the game in Game 5, to finally push the Nats through to the LCS where he would hit .417. The World Series where he'd bash two homers and drive in eight. It's going to be tough to say goodbye, but he is now an Angel and we've got to do that. And so here is now what I'd like to get into and the next phase of this discussion, the next branch on this Christmas tree. We got to put an ornament on the what to do now at third base branch. I know we're moving quickly. Them's the breaks. It's the way the industry works. 24-hour cycle, baby. We got to keep the train on the tracks. We're chugging along. Next stop, opening day. Nats Park, you're going to be loud, and the team's going to be introduced to try to begin its title defense. I'd love to sit here and reminisce and look back at all the greatest hits of Anthony Rendon, and maybe we'll do that in the coming weeks at some point. But right now, I want to know who you want to play third base for this team, and I'll open up the phones for you at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. Look, here's how I feel. There's one option in free agency and one only, and that's Josh Donaldson. I have no interest in a placeholder like Starlin Castro. I have no interest in someone who's going to come in here for a few weeks and be a pedestrian starter who doesn't play very good defense like Mikel Franco from the Phillies, who got DFA'd. No, thank you. If they go that route, that's fine. It just tells you that they feel like Carter Kieboom is probably going to be slotted at third base and going to be the starter within a few weeks at the beginning of the season. But if you actually want to sign someone or bring someone in who's going to start next year so that Keboom can stay at his more natural positions in the infield, then you're going to have to either sign Josh Donaldson or trade for somebody. I'll get into why I think Donaldson would be a fine option, but I've got a few names I would be really happy to see the Nats trade for that we can tackle next. A couple of them are star-type players who you've heard of. A couple are completely under-the-radar names I haven't heard anybody discuss yet that I think could be intriguing needle movers that would make this ball club better than it is today. Wouldn't be a Rendon replacement, but it would cushion the blow. It'd be somewhat cost-effective. And it would be much better than some type of Wilmer Defoe, Carter Kieboom out of position experience in 2020. But we'll get your thoughts as well. Rendon's out. Who starts at third for the Nats this coming year? What do you want to see them do at the hot corner? 800-636-1067. I'm Grant Paulson. This is Grant and Danny. Party time. Cookies are going to be there. I'm going to be there. I like cookies. Cookies like being eaten. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Football Friday, presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Going to get back into the pigskin. Top of the hour here coming up at 11 in about 15 minutes. What do I want to do at 11? Let's go Skins head coaching search. It's already underway. There's a bunch of candidates now, names being released. Who's your guy? Call your shot. Who would you want them to hire? We'll get into that coming up at the top. But right now, Rendon is out. Who's going to start at third for the Nationals? So I put together a list of names I am intrigued by. I told you the number one easiest thing to do, because you don't have to give anything up in a trade, is to sign Josh Donaldson. I am always more for spending money, not dipping into my system with prospects. I do not want to give up prospects in a trade for a player to solve a problem if I can avoid doing so. That makes sense, right? I'm just throwing cash at an issue if I pay Josh Donaldson. If I trade for Chris Bryant, I'm now having to trade Carter Kieboom and or Luis Garcia and or Jackson Rutledge and or Mason Denneberg. I don't have a deep enough system to be doing that anyway. I'm at a point now where I only have a few bucks. I'm giving you the last of my savings account if I'm trading for a Chris Bryant, which is why I don't think it's all that plausible. So, number one, sign Donaldson. 900 OPS, 37 home runs, 94 driven in last year. He walked 100 times. He gets on base. You're going to hear people say he's bad in the clubhouse. I'm not sure I completely buy that. I've talked to enough of his former teammates. I've seen enough of the celebrations after his home runs to know that his teammates like playing with him. He's supposedly an acquired taste, whatever that means. Maybe he'll ruffle some feathers. He'll hit 35 home runs and have a 900 ops while he does it. And I like this clubhouse enough to think that somehow, some way, he'll find a way to fit in okay. By the way, all the same things were said about Adam Eaton. Go back and look at his early history. He was a bad teammate, or, you know, people didn't like him. Different things were said. How's that materialized? That guy's beloved in the Nats clubhouse. So that's my number one idea. If you can't get Donaldson, because there's a bunch of teams that want him, I think you're going to have to give him a four-year contract, which I don't want to do, but I'll do if I need to. I'd rather sign him for three. But let's say you lose out on Donaldson. You should absolutely kick the tires on Chris Bryant, because he's the best available player at the position. And he's the one guy that, frankly, if he has a great season, you really wouldn't even miss Rendon that much. Chris Bryant's the only guy at third base who you've heard come up in any kind of rumors that might be able to give you a Rendon-ish year. 31 homers last season, 77 driven in, kind of a down year for him, but he got on base 38% of the time and hit .282. He's a career .284 hitter. This is a guy who's an MVP candidate. Now, he is statistically one of the top five most valuable players in baseball over the last five seasons now since he came up to the major leagues. So I would be intrigued by Chris Bryant. I think that that's something that Nats fans should be enamored with. Then you get into the next tier down of, okay, let's say you miss out on Donaldson, and we all know it's unrealistic that you go get Chris Bryant. Here's a couple of names that if I am in the Nats front office, I'm pitching to Mike Rizzo to say, what if we traded for that guy? First one I'll give you is Hunter Dozier of the Royals. was the eighth pick in the 2013 draft out of Stephen F. Austin. He's become a pretty good major leaguer the last 2 years. In 2018, he hit only .230 with 11 home runs. Last year, he hit about .280, but he hit 26 homers. He led the league with 10 triples. He doubled 29 times. His best baseball is ahead of him. He's just 28 years old. He can play third. He can play first. He can play the corner outfield in a pinch. Some defensive versatility. But he's a guy with some pop at third base. I think you could get him in a trade without giving up your best prospects. So jot the name Hunter Dozier down. That's kind of the tier I'm working with. The next name I'll give you is Tommy La Stella. La Stella, who used to play for the Cubs, more recently played a big role with the Angels, broke out and hit for a ton of power last year. They just brought in Anthony Rendon at third base. Now, as of right now, La Stella is penciled in as their starting second baseman. They would be giving up a starter, so you'd probably have to give something up for La Stella, who hit 16 homers and batted .295 last year in a half season. That was in 80 games. He got hurt. Missed the back half of the year. Made an all-star team right before his injury. If you double those numbers, 160 games, that's 36 homers, 88 RBI, .832 OPS. Again, not a star, not a guy like Chris Bryant that you'd have to sell the farm for, but I'm looking for power and run production at third base on the cheap. La Stella won't cost you nearly as much as a guy like Josh Donaldson would. Hunter Dozier not costing you nearly as much as Josh Donaldson would. In fact, if you look at what La Stella's earned in his career, he was making $1.3 million last year. He's a third-year ARB-eligible guy. I don't want to get into all the specifics because it's way too boring, but just know that's a bargain for a player that's going to come in here and maybe hit 15 or 20 home runs who started to use some launch angle and change the way he swings. And that brings me to my favorite trade candidate of all the options, right? Dozier, La Stella, the guy I would circle if I'm the Nationals and do what I can to go get is a player in New York named Miguel Andujar. He's 24. He was an elite prospect who has now, after 47 at-bats of hitting about .120 with the Yankees last year, only played in the big leagues for 620 ABs worth of experience, 17, 18, 19, mostly in 2018 when he hit .297 with 27 home runs. This is a 30 home run bat. This is a guy who could hit .300 a couple of times for you. This is an all-star who's 24 and whose value, I think, right now is somewhat depleted based on injuries and who, most importantly, doesn't have a job right now. The Yankees found a unearthed gem in Gio Urshela at third, and they've got DJ LeMahieu at second. LeMahieu could also play third, by the way. Andujar is their third baseman. He's excellent. He's better and younger than those other guys, but those other guys have played well. He should be a trade chip for them. They could get something back for him. So I would give up key pieces from my minor league system to get him. I think it would take a big package, a Bryant-esque package. Now, you probably move in Keboom and Garcia and maybe Denneberg, or let's say Garcia and Rutledge in a third piece or something as a start to this package. But that's a guy. I think you got to get creative, and I guess that's my big picture point here. If you're Mike Rizzo, you can't just say, well, can't sign Donaldson. Let's sign Castro and call it done. No. This should be a trade market addition that comes in here and helps. I'm preaching and begging for creativity at third base for the Nationals right now. Look around for an undervalued player at that spot who could flourish in your culture and your clubhouse. All right, I talked too much. Those are all my ideas, so we will get all of your thoughts next, I promise. If you've got a thought, call us. If you're on hold, we'll get to you next. 800-636-1067. This is very simple. I just gave you my ideas, how I'm going to fix third base. What is your plan? How are you going to? Grant and Danny, no Danny today on 1067.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.